Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Black Album was a really lousy album which had some of the lousiest songs. Don't buy any album from this band. They are lousy. Buy a Dire Straits or Foreigner CD instead. Metallica sucks, 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 Metallica are junk.
You left out one of the Metallica sucks.
Okay. Oh yeah, the one with the period. Metallica sucks.
Listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast. My name is Baco, and this week my plus one is my old friend Josh Toomey from the Talk Toomey podcast, and of course all sorts of other nonsense. Enjoy. Welcome to Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco, and joining me tonight is a special guest host from Floyd's Knobs, Indiana. Yes, apparently that's an actual name of a town. The one and only host of the Talk Toomey show, Joshua Toomey. Josh, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, man. If you look at every state's perverted name town, Floyd's Knobs, Indiana is our perverted sounding town name.
I'm trying to think what the one in Minnesota would be. I always like the city Castle Danger, but that's not really perverted. I don't know. I get Wisconsin just sounds like some kind of trashy porn name. That's our neighbor, but
everything in Wisconsin is perverted.
Oh man, I got to tell you, football just kicked off, and my Minnesota Vikings after week one are in first place, baby. If the season ended today, the 0-1 Minnesota Vikings would be hosting a playoff game. How about the Tennessee Titans, Josh? How you doing?
We would have probably the number one pick, and I just looked it up online. The most perverted-sounding town in Minnesota is Keister.
Oh, Keister, Minnesota. Yeah. Right on. You only get this kind of gold when you're on the show.
And then there's also Dick Wisconsin. So
Dick Wisconsin, all right.
huge numbers in Dick Wisconsin.
That's like one of those names that are just like too obvious. It's like, yeah, Dick Wisconsin. So Dick. Just spent some time in Wisconsin with my boy Ron Keel.
How was that show?
It was a lot of fun. The band was great. I was under it was actually kind of a private biker event. They were selling tickets, you know, to raise money for their biker club. But yeah, me and my boy Gene Vogel, we might have been the only men there wearing shorts. It was a lot of jeans and leather pants, but I did not see a lot of men in shorts.
Well, there are a lot of hog mamas.
There was some gnarly nudity going on. Quite a bit. They had a wet t-shirt contest. All I saw was the sign up. I didn't actually get to witness the event, but I did see a guy riding a motorcycle with a naked woman on it. But anyway.
Wow. Hey, that's what you get when you go to a Ron Keel show.
Yeah, exactly. You get crazy shit. So I met Ron's wife that night too. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah. So Gene and his wife and met up with my lovely bride Toots, and we just had a kind of a couple's night out. All you could drink too, so that kind of sucked because I was driving, so I couldn't. I probably could have come close to a $45, you know, amount of beer. You know, I couldn't have covered the 90 for both of us, but anyway,
you would have tried. You would have given your valiant effort.
Yeah, if we were camping for 2 days, there was camping on site and stuff like that. The weird thing is, it was a chili feed with no chili. Check out our previous episode for more details on that. But how you doing, man? You had a pretty big episode there over there in Talk To Me and the whole Knotfest show. One of your this guy might have been a launching pin for you actually picking up a guitar that has close to six strings, but not quite.
Yes, the lower end of the guitar spectrum. Jason Newsted, formerly of Metallica, on the Talk To Me podcast, talking all things 30th anniversary of the Black Album, and man, what an amazing chat I had, about an hour long, and not amazing because of me, amazing because of him.
I was so pumped. And then watching it too, just I don't know, seeing my boy.
Yeah, and that thing, we broke it up into four parts on the Knotfest YouTube, but collectively like 125,000 views right now, pretty insane.
Damn.
And let me tell you, the comments, the comment section has gone wild. So I have checked out from that thing. I have not looked at the comments in like a week because, whew, they are not too kind.
Hold on, I'm going to get the latest number on my Tony Harnell interview on YouTube there. It's the, it's at 48, not 1,000.
Well,
not 900.
Don't feel too bad. It's like 125,000, and then like my Phil Dimmel is like 508.
It's all good.
So, but yeah, he was
great. You were great. Carry on here, man.
Yeah, he was awesome, man. I don't take a ton of notes and have a ton of questions, but I had about a full sheet's worth of bullet points for this one and didn't get to like half of them because he's very long-winded. So you kind of had to steer the conversation in certain ways. And if you wanted to, get him to change subject, you just kind of had to do it abruptly. There was really no transition into it. But man, he was great. Couple blabbermouth articles out of it, you can't go wrong with that.
He is still, as much as he tried to talk about, he wants to do other things musically and stuff like that. But when that dude talks, that guy's a fucking metalhead, man.
He
is just a meathead metalhead, fired up and pumped up. And I mean that in the nicest way. Not a shot at all. I love the energy he brought to the band. I thought, Metallica could not have done better with the bass players they've chosen to replace over the years. From Robert replacing him, and of course him replacing
Cliff.
From him replacing Cliff. So obviously they've really kind of Les Claypool was in the running supposedly, but that seems weird.
That does seem very weird. Yeah, man. I mean, as much as I think Robert Trujillo is an awesome bass player, I think his braids and his jerseys and his gym shorts on stage always threw me off.
Really? I thought it would when they first hired him, but something about the crab walk and the way he kind of... And the fact that he seems to... Man, he just seems to... Almost like when he's on stage, he like just appreciates like, I'm the luckiest son of a bitch, like he really gets it like that. Even like, when they were on Kimmel, I kind of felt bad for him. They're doing all this press for the 30th anniversary and the guy's not even on the damn record. But at the same time, I don't feel bad for him. It's weird. So,
well, that's like the first thing he ever did with Metallica was the Metallica icon thing. So the very first public appearance as a member of Metallica, he was doing MTV Icon series, so I guess he's just thrown into that.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't be? There's nothing. It's not like he can do anything about it. It's just all that good stuff. So
yeah, but I think most fans would have been okay with just the three of them walking out and doing that show, And, you know, but they wanted Robert there, you know, which I guess I get, you know, they want the brotherhood and the band together.
Well, I think so. I don't begrudge any of the, like, that kind of stuff. What else are they going to do? You know, Jason quit, you know, Cliff passed away. These aren't kind of like, you know, these things that, like, they've done anything wrong. So, yeah, he's a member of the band. He should be there, you know. But I get why he's not getting answering as many questions as maybe Lars and James or even the guitar player guy there.
Yeah, that's the one thing in all of this that just makes you just realize how big of a dork Kirk is.
I know, right?
It's so bad.
I love Kirk, though. When we get into the record, we'll break this down a little more, but he gets kind of hammered as a guitar player a little bit unfairly, and I think that's largely out of jealousy because I think, he is who he is, but he's definitely not a fucking hack, man.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a great guitar player, just a big old dork of a human.
All right, so we'll save the Black Album talk there for the back half of the episode here. I did have a question for you, though. Recently, my wife and I were having a conversation that I need you to chime in on because I've gone my whole life assuming one thing, and it turns out that maybe I'm wrong. That doesn't happen to me a lot, Jimmy. That does not happen often. But do women have groins? She says yes, I say no.
Well, I mean, when an athlete pulls their groin muscle, it's not necessarily their junk muscle. So it's
but it's all the muscles leading up to the junk. You know what I mean? It's like the inner thigh muscles connecting to the balls and the taint. That's the groin.
So when a runner strains that area, you know, what do they call it with a female runner? Did they say groin?
Well, according to my wife, yes. But to me, they just say. Well, I guess I don't know because who watches female sports?
Well, I mean, you're Minnesota Lynx up there, so I'm sure they've won a few championships, right?
Yeah, no, they're very talented in that women's basketball or whatever it is.
How about me pulling the Minnesota Lynx out on you?
that's a pretty solid drop. Yeah, I mean, you did kind of skip past the football talk. Was it because you wanted to get right to the WNBA shit?
I mean, they probably did much better than our collective football teams.
I don't know. First place. I don't know what. I got nothing to complain about. We're hosting a whole playoff game, baby. Oh man, nobody lost as good as we did in our division. We all four teams lost, and we just lost in a more respectable and, you know, less of a margin manner. So.
I mean, if you want to get down to it, I mean, as I was watching the Titans game the other day, I don't think there was a worse loss with expectation that we've taken in a long time.
Fair enough. We lost to the Bengals, so maybe that's something, though.
Yeah, but we lost by like 25 points.
Yeah, you did get beat pretty bad. Who'd you play?
Arizona.
God, they're going to kick our ass. So in week two, I don't think we're going to be in first place anymore after week two. I've had a bad feeling. I go in with such fucking sky-high optimism. I'm almost every season. But, like, our coach hates our quarterback. Our quarterback is kind of stupid. They just watched film together for the first time since Kirk Cousins has been a fucking Viking quarterback. And it was at Kirk's request. Now, that could mean nothing. Maybe Zim never watches, you know, with the quarterbacks, period. He is a defensive guy. But that seems kind of odd that your head coach has never watched game film with your starting quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, but like you said, I think he's much more of a defensive coach, so you've got that going. So.
Yeah, he does seem to turn the offense over to whoever his coordinator is. But then he, you know, he's had six coordinators in 8 years. Jesus.
I'm football. I've been listening to so much Titans talk lately that I'm just like, we're about to go get spanked by Seattle. And then our season starts. Like, we're just going to, then we'll go play the Colts and then hopefully we can win a game.
Oh, they're horrible. They're doomed. Carson Wentz is in mid-season form right now.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to any of this.
Hey, you know what? It's a week one overreaction from a losing team from a couple of super fans that don't actually bet money on the game. So, well, at least I don't. I guess I shouldn't assume anything from you, but
I put a little scratch on the game. Don't get me wrong.
A little scratch. You know, although I am in the Ron, you'll love this. Ron Keel Patreon members, he has a special pick'em group on where you just pick the winners, but you put like a point value on it. So I got in late. I didn't even get the Tampa Bay game, which I would have picked right because I would have picked Tampa Bay. So I lost out on any points I got from that. I am in second place, 1 point behind the leader of the group after 1 week with a 9-6 win-loss pick'em. So, yeah, I'm going to fucking kill this fucking stupid Ron Keel Patreon league. And there's $100 on the line, and I don't have to do anything. So
nice.
Well, I had, you know, just to bore listeners even more.
Oh, right. Yeah, we're killing them right now. They've already kind of, there's a lot of skipping ahead going.
I had a three-leg parlay in the Arizona-Tennessee game. So and these three things have to win.
You're
going
to need to explain the three-leg parlay for LC's benefit.
Three bets in the one game have to happen. So I had Derrick Henry under 96 yards because he always starts out slow. I had...
It's because he's fat.
James... Yeah. That's what he is. I had James Conner over like 27 yards
because I figured he would.
Nick Chubb, and I had Ryan Tannehill rushing over 17.5 yards.
What was the middle one? I'm sorry.
James Conner, who the running back from the Steelers that went to the Cardinals, is their second string, over 26 yards. I was like, yeah, it sounds like he'll get that. So he got that easy. Derrick Henry got 58 yards, so I got that easy. Ryan Tannehill, I had to get over 17.5. He rushed for exactly 17 yards. I was like, you motherfucker.
What kind of scratch would you have pulled in on that?
Like $35. It was a $5 bet to win 40.
Just too bad.
Remember to call my name, I darling. If you speak my name, I implore. If with all these things we invoke here, call you out I may, but be forewarned you. I don't mind the thing. I don't mind.
I assume preparation for this show, you texted me a video of Dave Ellison talking about is he doing like some book or something for Nick Menza?
He is narrating a like a documentary that I guess Nick Menza took a lot of home video footage around that time. So the family has got a director and
Is it around a certain time or just a Metallica or Megadeth time?
Yeah, it's just like those like 88 to 90, you know, the good era. You know, the Rust in Peace era. So yeah, that should be a lot of fun to watch.
Is he going to get Marty Friedman involved and then they can be like the lighter Megadeth light or something like that? I know Nick's passed away, by the way. I just I'm just saying maybe Dave Elvison now is going to get involved with everybody Dave's ever fired.
Well, yeah, he could, you know, get a band with Chris Poland and, you know.
Poland sounds like a penis.
I'm currently listening to the Dave Mustaine autobiography.
You're listening to it, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
I actually got that autograph from him.
Nice.
Yeah, what year did that come out? It was about 9 years ago at this point.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. It's a good book.
He does not talk highly on pretty much anybody.
No, other than the man in the mirror. He doesn't have a high X.
Oh, yeah, he's great. Like,
yeah. I love weird love for him. And I also like, you know, I agree with everything I say about him on the show where like he's just kind of this angry guy. And I loved it. I think LC summed it up best when he said he doesn't jerk off, he beats off. He's like a self-loathing, I don't know, something.
Yeah, he's really hung up on people's shoes.
He complimented mine. They're black Nike Air Monarchs. He's like, those are sweet. So
did he really?
No.
Okay.
Oh, God.
I figured that would be awesome if he did, though.
It really would be. No, he was actually very soft. He was like basically doing the one thing to everybody that came through. He'd sign the book, and then he'd like kind of like, thank you. Thank you so much.
You know, during the euthanasia tour, if you donated 10 pounds of food to the local food bank, you got a backstage pass. So me and Jeremy Owsley, I believe you've
met
before.
That seems pretty easy to do. Fuck.
So we go down and we
Although that's like $9,000 of ramen.
Yeah, it was pretty well. You know, we got 10 cans. I think we did like 10 cans of, you know, green beans or something. But you took it down there. You got the backstage pass. It actually looked like a tomato soup, Campbell's soup can. And then after or before the show? I can't remember. But they lined everybody up in the seats of the arena. Who all did it? And they all just kind of came, like they were in the row in front of you, and they all kind of came down and signed autographs and kept it moving. But yeah, it was a good time. You know, got to meet him. I think I was. What, 15, 16? You know, you can't go wrong with that.
Wow. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I was like 35, and I was like, oh my God, you're fucking Dave Mustaine. So, whatever. Are you looking forward to the new Megadeth record, or are you tapping out because of the whole Elofson nonsense?
I mean, I'll definitely stream it.
I know you will. Yeah, give that money to that one dude in fucking Switzerland or whatever, that tech guy. Thank you, hey, Fork. Thank you. Delicious meal.
Thank you, table. No, I mean, yeah, I'll definitely check it out. I mean, I'm excited to see, you know, Megadeth. I'm still possibly going to Iowa for Knotfest Iowa, and Megadeth is there, so.
You have to be definitely bummed about the Faith No More news, huh?
Oh, yeah. That was going to be like the pinnacle of that night.
I wish you would have told me you were thinking of going to Knotfest. I probably would have bought tickets.
Well, I mean, you know, if you were thinking about going, then I probably could have got you tickets. But if I was going to go, and if you were going to go, I could have.
I'll keep that mind going. Hey, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I'll keep that in the back pocket for next year.
I know people, Baco. I know people.
Yeah, you're pretty much my, I'm on the Toomey coattails now.
If I ever make a flyer, your name will be up high. Don't get me wrong.
Right on. Elofson has a new project out, Lucid. Have you checked out any of that?
Yeah, I checked out the one song they have out. It's not terrible.
It is. It's actually very bad. It's one of the worst things I've heard in my entire life. It sounds rushed. He's got like the lead singer from Sponge.
Yeah.
And,
well, I mean, from what I know, I mean, this,
who's basically like a name that's everywhere, but you know, not well known.
Yeah, they've had this together for a while, and Drew sent me this, God, back in January. I mean, this is something he's been sitting on, so I don't know how rushed it would have been. But he,
I'm just saying it sounds rushed.
There's no telling how they recorded it. I mean, they could have recorded it in you know, basements and everything else, but yeah, it's just
sound wise, it's fine. I just think it's a really boring song, and that singer sounds like, well, his best days are behind him.
It sounds like he was in Sponge.
Yeah, it sounds like he was in Sponge.
Ellefson needs to get together with like Anselmo or just somebody like that and make a super.
Yeah, have you ever tried to give away a Sponge CD? It's really difficult. They boomerang back. I bought all three of them used, and I've on two or three different times trying to give them to somebody who said I kind of like Sponge. Well, here you go. Here's three CDs. They're like, no, I don't want them. Here, have them back. it's easier to get rid of a Jesus Chrysler CD. That's how hard it is.
Those are priceless.
Yeah, no doubt. There is no price.
yeah. I'm glad to see him popping up. Oh, you know, I thought the video was funny.
Popping up.
Yeah, that was not a joke. That was an actual just phrase I made. But no, like, you need to, just the simple fact that in that video I sent you, did you watch the video?
I did, yeah.
When his first line out of his mouth is,
"Hi, everybody, David Olson here. Just coming to let you know, coming to let you know, coming to let you know."
You can't say coming.
Never say, "I'm coming here first. Coming to you first."
No, you cannot. You're not allowed, Dave Ellefson. But no, I mean, Dave rules, and hopefully everything works out in the end with all this, you know, sexual misconduct nonsense.
Well, Ron Young of Little Caesar, by the way, I think that interview's up to 69, not 1,000, 69 streams on YouTube. He actually, I don't know if you listened to that one, but he thinks it's going to get reconciled eventually. Like, yeah, he'll be back in the band. Yeah, I mean, he's like, come on, the guy just jacked off to him.
Right. Yeah, so.
it is so silly to think that we're even talking about this. The fact that it's about that and not like, you know, like I swear to God, if it just came out that like he had actually had sex with this woman, he would not be kicked out of the band. It's because it's like some kind of weird jerking off on a kid.
Yeah, the only kicking out that should have happened was like his wife and the house.
Yeah, that, I mean, that I get. You know what I mean? I mean, he goes like, well, you know.
And like I said, I'm listening to the Mustaine autobiography and you know, listening to his shit that he talks about. Like Dave Ellefson's jerk off videos are not something you kick anybody out of a band for. I mean, Gar Samuelson was showing up to practice without his cymbals and sticks because he was pawning them for smack.
Like, well, smack is kind of expensive, you know what I mean? So,
well, yeah, they had to get well.
No, I hear you. Maybe there's something like Dave Mustaine actually is close to Ellefson's wife or something like that. Maybe she played a role in him cleaning up himself or something. I'm devil's advocating the shit out of this, but yeah, I'm with you. It's just it's kind of silly. He was actually just here with Drew at Crypticon here in Minneapolis.
Did you go?
It was the night that I went to see Ron Keel. I chose Ron
Keel, Dave Ellefson.
Like, like, do I go to?
Hey, you man, know what? You're living the dream.
If I went to Crypticon, I would not have had to go to Wisconsin, which, you know, there was some balance in there, you know, but anyway.
And not a lot of people want to go to Wisconsin.
No, look at the people we know from Wisconsin. They all leave. They get jobs. They move to the Twin Cities. They move to Nashville, and then they like just show up and troll you at like, you know, some kind of summer picnic.
And done.
enjoyed Ricky Rockman and
Rackman.
His time.
Ricky Rackman. It's Ricky Rackman.
I don't know. I've had him on the show. I think it's Rockman.
Okay.
Ricky Rackman, you know, from, you know, his Headbangers Ball kind of stuff. And that was kind of like, you know, when you were like, you know, just hitting the pubes were popping out and you're like sitting around watching MTV at 11 o'clock at night. I saw a little headline. Do you know more about it than I do? I didn't get a chance to read it. It was just before I was leaving work tonight. Something that on Metal Sludge was sharing, like they're about being a poser or something like that.
Yeah, a good friend of the podcast universe that we're in, Dr. Fuck, over there at the Rock and Metal Combat podcast. I guess a few years ago he had made this Ricky Rackman as a poser video. I've seen it before, and he re-uploaded it recently on his current YouTube channel. And
almost
somehow,
human, is that what it's called?
Almost human. You know, he started sharing it around. I guess it got a little buzz again, and then Metal Sludge picked it up, and then everybody's just kind of trashing Ricky Rackman once again. But my my words to you, Ricky Rackman, my words to you, Dr. Fuck, is you were just in the same room with Ricky Rackman. Say it to his face.
Say it to his face, bitch.
So that's what I got to say.
Well, what does the video entail? Like, what's his argument? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. It's just like a 3-minute clip of Ricky Rackman, and Ralph is doing a Ricky Rackman impression over the video. It's funny. I mean, it's clever. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, obviously Ralph's a very funny dude.
Sure. Yeah,
but he's just like, you know, oh, I like Trickster, but now I like Nirvana, and, you know, screw all that hair metal stuff, and I'm going to cut my hair. You know, it's just,
okay,
just poking fun at Ricky. It's not, you know, he's just calling Ricky Rackman a poser. And then everybody in the Metal Sludge, you know, comment section is having a ball with it too.
It's weird because I have kind of a, I really don't have a big problem with Ricky or what he did. I think people held him a little too accountable considering his job. And at times, but at the same time, he's really not always his strongest advocate. But what the hell are we even talking about? We're all grown men. He just got a mohawk, for crying out loud.
Right.
He said make changes, and it's never too late to just do something radical in life. He was just with us in Nashville there. He played a Ramones song. Yeah. Now, there's been speculation that he played up. Like, you know, that you know, did he just start playing bass 3 days before, or has he actually slapped on the weakest instrument in any rock band prior to that?
I don't know. I didn't go to the jam.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Blitzkrieg Bop is what I saw. That's riding that A string pretty heavy there, but eighth notes, I think. Oh, that might be 16th, actually. No, that's 8th, yeah.
I know Ricky gets a lot of crap, and Ricky knows he gets a lot of crap, too. I mean, every time I've interviewed him, he's very self-deprecating.
But he also always brings it up.
Oh, yeah, it definitely bothers him. Like, it 100% bothers him, you know?
And bothered me, too, man. I was like, what the fuck, yeah? At a certain point, you do have to be kind of above it. I mean, I get some hate. I don't get it to the level he does, though. It just seems like it seems like it's a little unbalanced with him. And maybe I'm missing something, but like, the guy hosted a fucking metal TV show for a few years in the early 90s, and we're still harping on him, and we're tweeting him bullshit over like wanting to play bass at a gig in Nashville.
Right.
Who gives a crap?
Yeah, it's nuts, man. I mean, I was in that, like you said, I was in that sweet spot of. You know, middle school, high school, when Headbangers Ball with Ricky Rackman was on. So, I mean, obviously I had no life. So I was at home on Saturday nights, you know, when you were in college having your, waking up in a field with, you know, beers all around you and shit like that.
Not women, but, not women, beers.
All the women.
Yeah, no. You're right about the fields too. You've been to Minnesota then too, it turns out.
Right? I played First Avenue, I believe. But yeah, what was the
name of that Keister? You've been a big fan of Keister, Minnesota for a long time.
I love Keister,
yeah.
Minnesota.
Summers in Keister, I'll never forget.
Waking up in a cornfield.
There's
the
double entendre. Summers in Keister.
Summers in Keister. Yeah, he
search that in YouPorn, baby.
Yeah, he gets a lot of hate, but you know, he was my Headbangers Ball host, and Headbangers Ball at the time introduced me to a ton of bands that I still love to this day. So Ricky Rackman, you have no you have a fan in me.
And then I also caught, there was a minute where the two of you were talking in Nashville. It was funny because I saw Ricky, all I heard him say was, "Aren't you that guy from Primer?"
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like me. But I gotta think twice before I give my heart away. And I know all the games you play, 'cause I play them too. Oh, but I need some time off from that emotion. Time to pick my heart up off the floor. Takes a song and baby, but I'm showing you that door. Rock, gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Gotta have faith, baby. I know you're asking me to stay. Stay, baby.
One of my favorite takeaways from your interview with Jason Newsted was that you kind of implied, if didn't directly say, that he was kind of the reason, and him and then Metallica, that you kind of picked up the bass guitar largely with the release of this record.
I grew up a Kiss fan, you know, grew up as a Kiss fan, as in like 8, 9 years old, liking makeup
still weird.
Kiss. And,
still weird.
And, and being into that. And then when I had heard something off of Injustice for All, but I was still like 10 or 11, so it didn't click. But then Enter Sandman comes out, and the video is all over MTV, and everyone around me is listening to it, and it blows my mind. And then that's when I got really serious about wanting to be in a band, and I really gravitated towards bass, Jason Newsted, obviously Cliff Burton.
Now, I was a lot younger when my life changed, and I literally was 7 years old. I heard Kiss Alive 2 for the first time, opened up the picture, saw Paul Stanley and looked at that guitar, and I had no idea at the age of 7 that this was going to carry on for the rest of my life. But at the time, I was like, I want that guitar, and I want to play this music. And it turned out I did both. But so it was very instant for me. But again, I think when you're 7 years old, things happen a little quicker. But yeah, so you, how old would you have been? This came out August 12th, 1991. How old was future god of podcasting?
Eddie Trunk was. No, I was 12.
Still pretty young. So you got a bass guitar when you were 12, huh?
I did.
Your tiny hands were able to wrap around that?
I mean, I was... Yeah, I saved allowance and lunch money and some Christmas money and bought a Memphis P-Bass copy from the music store there. My dad chipped in and bought like a crate, like a little crate.
My first guitar amp was a crate. My first somewhat good amp was a crate. My first one was like JCPenney.
Yeah, I think it was called the BX-10. It was a 10-watt amp. And it sounded like hell. And I bought tab books and all that stuff for all of Metallica. I mean, literally from the time this album was released till about 93, I think it was just everything I played was Metallica.
What was the first song you learned?
First song all the way through that I played was For Whom the Bell Tolls.
In general or by Metallica?
By Metallica. Oh, I mean, in general and by Metallica.
Okay. All right. Okay. Wow. All right. Fair enough.
I mean, I didn't do it good. I'm just saying.
What's that? Yeah, I was looking for like, I don't even know what I was going for there. Like Unskinny Bop, I guess. That's to help LC out there. That would be the Bobby Doll joke.
I did later on, we joked around at practice a lot with that Unskinny Bop. Ba-doom, doom, 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 doom.
So, do you know how to play it on Skinny Bop?
Yeah, it's an A string.
Oh, what's this? Oh, I'm just nothing. Just sitting here.
Yeah, right? You just, damn, you're just pulling up the guitar?
Uh-oh, Tubi. We got an online jam session going. Oh, fuck. Listen to that tone. That is fucking beefy. You know what the fun thing is? I'm playing through a bass amp right now.
Damn. Was this in your notes to go off the rails like this?
Absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, why do you think everything's plugged in? It's tuned, it's plugged in, I'm ready to go. No, so, all right, did you get the record right away? Like, were you, as a 12-year-old who needed to, like, scrimp and save to buy a bass, did you have enough money to go out and buy the cassette, I assume?
Definitely bought the cassette. I can't say that I was, like, a week one buyer. I don't know that I had a ride to the Sam Goody.
Okay. I definitely was not. I was really, really upset with Injustice for All. I still, it's my least favorite Metallica record. And I needed to be proven. And then when I heard it, I didn't really have that reaction that a lot of Metallica fans had at that point to this, where it was like, what the hell is this? It's pop music, that kind of stuff. But it just didn't really gravitate and click with me instantly. But I think that was largely because I was so disenchanted with that record prior. It was just like, I don't even know. It's easy for me to put words to it now, but at the time, my mind was like, this is way too long. It's bad. It sounds horrible. I hate that one song. You know, and it's just, I don't know.
Which one?
The song One. I don't like it. I was mad that became kind of a hit. And I like Blackened, and that's it off Injustice.
I like Injustice for All. I definitely got into it. And, I mean, I celebrate the first five albums, you know.
I'm actually, I don't know, I'm okay with most of their catalog, to be honest with you, other than Injustice and, that whole Rehab record, Saint Anger, but... I did find an interesting fact. I don't know if we want to get into these, how we want to do it, but I'm just going to throw it in there. Like, of the 16 million copies that have sold of this record, 5 million were on cassette.
I was definitely one of those 5 million.
Now, I have, I'll show you. This is the, I'll describe for the listener. This is the actual CD I bought.
Nice.
At Face the Music, and I don't know, it would have been within the first year of it coming out. And then I recently purchased, I don't know, the last couple of years, a recent pressing of the vinyl. Like, it's on their own record label, the Blackened Records deal. It's nice. Not one of those special Walmart exclusive color deals. This is before that stuff happened, but not too much prior. It's too, like a double LP, one of those deals.
Nice. Yeah. I bought the new box set. Has 16 CDs in it.
That is unreal. How much was it again?
$277.
Jesus Christ.
That should be the end of the episode. That's it.
Yeah. I was going to keep interrupting you.
16
CDs. Give us the breakdown. What do we got here?
6 DVDs.
Are these all like just live concerts or?
Yeah, just live concerts and some live videos and some, Enter Sandman outtakes and.
How many versions of Enter Sandman are there on that blacklisted CD?
Not as many as Nothing Else Matters. Nothing Else Matters. There's like 100.
and my God, can we stop acting like Miley Cyrus has anything to add to anything?
That Miley Cyrus, that was good, man. That was really
come
good.
On, that was just, oh my.
You don't talk bad about Dolly Parton's goddaughter.
Oh, you know, Dolly Parton needs better taste. Yeah.
I didn't know where you were going with taste. I heard the t, and I was like, where are we going with that, Baco?
Taste.
Hey,
you can
here's
no
your favorite
fucking
your
Billy
favorite
Cyrus.
Part 6 LPs.
Hmm. Do you even have a turntable?
I do. Ooh, I actually have a turntable over you'll actually probably enjoy my record player setup. Because it is one of the newer record players, but I bought an old console record player, and then it had auxiliary. It did have an auxiliary port on the back, so I've got like an old grandma record player, but I've got it kind of jacked up with a new turntable in it. So
nice.
Sounds like you're at Mama's house hanging out.
Meemaw.
No, Mama. So yeah, you get a. LPs 1 and 2 are Metallica, the Black Album. LP 3. Yep.
Remastered.
It is remastered. LP 3, Sad But True Picture Disc.
Eh.
LP 4 is Live at Wembley Stadium.
Cool.
LP 5 and 6 is the Moscow show that was like a million people there.
Nice.
Yeah, so there you go. CD1, Metallica Remastered. CD2, you get interviews. CD3, also interviews from the era. CD4, riffs and demos. You can just hear James jamming on the Inner Sandman riff.
Say it one more time.
Oh, CD4 and CD5 are riffs and demos.
Ooh. God damn it, Timmy. Hold on. Give me a second.
I didn't spaciously set up my place here. Okay, CD4 is riffs and demos. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, CDs 4 and 5, riffs and demos.
Jesus Christ. This is turning into a train wreck. Hold on. I can't even... my headphone came unplugged again. Hold on. At least I got the Easter egg now. Are you still there?
Yep.
There we go.
I bought these headphones, you know, the ones that you have, but I actually broke them one night right before I had a live stream. And so I bought the same kind again, but I bought the Bluetooth ones.
Oh.
But the jack that you have in here, it goes in and turns, so that wouldn't happen if you bought the $10 or more ones.
Mm. That's a good tip. I'm definitely going to be buying those pretty soon here.
So CD7, rough and alternate mixes.
Nice.
Did we say CD6 was pre-production and radio edits? CD8, rough and alternate mixes, disc 2. CD9, the Day on the Green show.
That'd be cool.
CD10 is live at Arco Arena. CD11 is also live at Arco Arena. CD12, another live at Arco Arena. CD13, live in Mannheim, Germany, 1993.
Mannheim, yeah, yep. Baby. That's a keister.
I was about to say, that's like the... I think that translates to keister. 14 CD live at Mannheim. And then, you got DVD1, Year and a Half of the Life of Metallica, Outtakes.
Mm.
That's a good one. I haven't even watched any of these yet. DVD 2, live in Copenhagen. DVD 3, live in Nuremberg, Germany. Live DVD 4, live at Worcester, Belgium.
Worcester. That's where the sauce
DVD
is.
DVD 5, Ross Halfen's home videos from around the time.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And DVD 6, Wherever We May Roam, live DVD.
Is that everything then, or?
Then it also came with a 120-page full-color book. Three lithographs, a lanyard. You got a bunch of remake tour laminates, guitar picks, and, yeah, and a beautiful box.
Sweet.
I do have to pick that.
I gotta work this bit a little bit. Nice. Yeah, hey, give us a little bit of, you were playing it when you got surprised the other day. My favorite tune here, My Friend of Misery. Give us a little bit of that. I don't know how to play it.
Or the other big
screaming. Damn, man, we've gotten we've gotten kind of a super fan on this thing here.
Hey, man, I am a super fan.
All right, I'm putting the guitar away.
All right, me too.
Yeah, you can't beat that beefy 10-watt bass. That's a 10-watt Fender bass amp I have down here in the basement.
Nice.
Yeah, it's actually works out pretty good for a fill-in guitar. Hey, let's talk about the beefy sound. That's one of the things that Metallica kind of brought Bob Rock in for. And fucking delivered on this goddamn record. Let me ask you this. Why did that disappear with every record that Bob produced after this?
You know, I have no clue. It's funny because I got so into Metallica when this album came out, but by the time Load came out, like, I was already into, like, nu metal and death metal and just, like, every other...
That had to be, like, you know how, like, long that time between, like, 12 and 17 seems?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a lifetime. And then I remember getting Load and... just nice. Being so bummed out by it. Just, I mean, I can listen to it now, but it's still like I know most people are like, Metallica died when Cliff died, or And Justice for All was the last good album, or the only good album is Ride the Lightning.
I wouldn't say most. They didn't sell as many records when those were the fans, you know what I mean? But
yeah. I get it. I mean, I like the first five albums to me are pretty untouchable. And then it's just, like, tolerable after that.
Yeah, you know, and to me that's fair, though. I mean, honestly, you know, the older you get, the harder it is to kind of recreate that magic and stuff, especially when you start making fucking money. You know, it's difficult to still burn. And so, like, you know, James feeling sorry for himself for having a drinking problem was the closest thing they had to kind of having that anger again. And
What's crazy is putting out this Jason Newsted interview where we go hard into the Black album, and the comments that aren't aimed at me are very like, this album sucks, you know, this ruined the band, you know. It's just funny seeing all of that kind of pop up and how many people just hate this album.
Well, I love that Jimmy Kimmel bit where people, like, read mean tweets and stuff. So he had Metallica on promoting this record. It was like reading the Amazon one-star reviews. That was it. Look, they weren't as, like, funny as I was hoping, but it was still pretty cool watching those guys kind of read them.
I just saw an interview with James today talking about the that Virginia Tech Enter Sandman clip that was going around. And
I don't know what you're talking about there.
Virginia Tech football pregame, they do the whole buildup of Enter Sandman, and everyone's jumping, and I guess it registered on the seismograph or whatever it is, the earthquake.
Oh, okay.
The earthquake Otron. So James was talking about how cool it was to, I guess the question was, did you know you were writing a song that one day would something, you know, do this? And he's like, that just happened organically. You know, you can sit down and try to write, let's pump up a crowd song, and it's going to suck. But the way that the fans and the team embraced Enter Sandman as their kind of pump up pregame song has kind of taken a life on its own.
You can't sit down and go, I'm going to write a timeless rock song and then come up with one. You know what I mean? It doesn't fucking work that way. But that opening riff that I was, you know, that I was butchering here earlier, that doom 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 doom, that is like manipulated in at least three different spots, slightly different as far as playing, but it sounds like the same kind of repeat part. And I think that might be something that Bob Rock brought to the table as far as like kind of understanding more of the music theory kind of stuff. And production and like try it this way, that kind of deal. Kirk's one of the things that he gets shredded for is the use of the wah, and then of course pentatonic scale stuff. But he does it very well, very tastefully. But this is the record where like I'm going to use the wah on almost every solo kind of started.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if it ain't broke.
Well, after this record, he's like, well, that's what I'm doing from now on. thanks, Bob.
Hey, man, if I have a podcast that goes, 16 million selling, I'm just going to repeat that over and over.
So, every day is the greatest hits. Oh, my God. So Bob Rock was kind of an interesting choice of producer at the time because he had just come off of, like, Dr. Feelgood with Motley Crue. And now I actually get it. Like, if Dr. Feelgood, to me, is not that great of a Motley Crue record, but you cannot argue with the sound of the guitars and drums on that record.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and even the bass. It's just beefy, and that's what Metallica wanted. You know, they're especially coming off of the we don't even have a bass player in Justice for All. So, oh, by the way, I love that Jason was just open and honest. Like, yeah, that hurt my feelings. That sucked. That couldn't fucking hear anything. I still don't get. God.
So bad.
Your interview with was it Steve Thompson? He broke it down like he was like he got it to where like he couldn't hear any bass. He's like, and then Lars like, take it -4 dBs. You know, like really, you want it less than nothing? You know, it's like Jesus.
Yeah, I'd be pretty pissed if my debut album with the band and they completely take me off of it. And no, it was coming
he was
off
on that
of
little EP.
Wow, that debut. I said debut album.
Okay.
But the EP, you know, the Garage Days EP. I mean, he's all over that. I mean, mm-hmm. It's all basses. You know, Crash Course Through Brain Surgery and all that stuff, man.
Yeah, he peaked with Flotsam. Hey, have you heard his? Not to get too much into this, his band Newstead that album.
Yeah, I thought it was all right.
I think it's slightly better than all right. I think it's a solid good.
I was happy to see him back, and I was happy to see, you know, everything going on with him. But I thought the album, that is an album that sounded like it was recorded in a bedroom.
Oh, like, boy. I that's some harsh criticism there.
It sounded very demo-y.
I think you're thinking of Echo Brain.
I don't think I ever heard Echo Brain.
I only saw it in the Metallica documentary where Lars is like, I guess Metallica's done. Echo Brain's the future. Jason won't talk to me.
Well, that's what you get for being a dick.
Yeah, no, I think Jason left at the right time as far as what was going on there, man. I don't know. I really don't know how Kirk Hammett kind of rode that through other than that he basically is the fucking punching doll that he's portrayed to be sometimes.
He's a tough one, man. I mean, even on Saint Anger, I mean, he finally got to play rhythm tracks. So,
it's unreal, huh? Yeah, and yet he has a story of how he wrote the riff for Sandman. I also found out today that Lars Ulrich didn't know the reference Sandman, like what it was about.
If you listen to the Metallica podcast that they've been putting out, James actually said his original idea for Enter Sandman was a like child death.
Basically, sudden infant death syndrome.
Yeah, like
SIDS?
crib death. Crib death is what I'm looking for.
Okay.
And then basically tearing a family apart and all this other stuff. And he handed the lyrics in, and Bob and Lars were like, "Yeah, nah. Like, we have ideas for this song. You need to try again." And he said it actually really pissed him off because he'd never been challenged like that before.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple documentaries out there where it's like, there's this one scene where Lars wants to play something again and James throws a hissy fit like, "I'm going to lose my voice. I wouldn't ask you to play a drum roll if your arm fell off." And then they go through this like pandering to James moment. And then James agrees to do it, and then he does the worst job at faking being hoarse. Like it's just like, ah, God, that guy had to be. And then, of course, we see that whole other some kind of animal documentary, and James does not come off looking like a reasonable human being in that. "You guys cannot listen to playbacks after 4 o'clock when I leave." It's like, oh, my God, seriously?
He's only allowed to work from 12 to 4 in that, yeah.
Yeah, and that means you're only allowed to work from 12 to 4, and it's just like, Jesus. Lars always came off as, like, just a fucking douchebag, and he comes off fucking so reasonable in that movie. That's how bad James is. It's like, wow, man. So, yeah, my point is that, like, yeah, there's all sorts of stories of Bob Rock, you know. Give it up to him, man, that he rode through this. This was like an 8-month recording session where he actually accomplished probably most of what he wanted to do, but had to fight every step of the way, largely with James.
I went back and watched a year and a half before the Jason Newsted interview, and just kind of getting back into that mind frame of, you know, like, Metallica was my favorite band.
Yeah.
100% my favorite band at the time. And like, they kind of steered me on this path. I mean, even Jason and I talk about that in the interview. You know, if it wasn't for the Black Album, I'm not doing this. I'm not heavily into metal and playing music and blah, blah, blah. Like, all of it, you know, the butterfly effect moment was getting heavily into Metallica. But seeing Some Kind of Monster later on, and even going back and watching A Year and a Half of the Life of Metallica, you kind of see the you know, kinks in the armor or whatever.
You're like
the band that you always thought could do no wrong, and then over the years too, like stories of them kind of ripping songs off, and you know, there's a great Gary Holt story out there of an old Exodus song that's basically the coolest part of Creeping Death.
That part by chance?
Yes.
Okay.
And even in that, there's a die chant. I mean, it's crazy. It's like an unreleased Exodus song that Gary Holt wrote.
Okay.
That's 100% Creeping Death. And then the big epic outro to One is a Dark Angel song. I mean, you put that on, you're like, oh my God. But so there's so much out there that now that you kind of, the band that you thought could do no wrong did a lot of wrong or something.
Let's do a hard shift here. I have a trivia question on this record for you. And I'm watching you. I'm making sure you're not Googling. During the recording of this record, 3 of the members of the band were getting divorces. Which 3 members of the band were on their way to their a divorce?
Well, I know the joke was always they got married on Injustice for All and they got divorced on the Black Album.
Okay. It's a good joke.
Hilarious. So the 3 members would be, I don't know, I'm trying to think who didn't get divorced. James, Lars, Kirk.
So close. James, I believe, is still married to the woman that he was married to at this point. It was everybody else. Lars, Jason, and Kirk.
Any other trivia?
No, that was it. That was the one thing I wanted to throw at you. But
I know you love trivia.
All right. Well, here's some facts for the listeners anyway. Metallica, which is actually what the album's called. It's not actually called the Black Album. And Craig Smith might need to chime in here, but I do not believe the Beatles' White Album is actually called the White Album. I think it's just called the Beatles. These are kind of like names that the albums took on after the fact. So, but Metallica is the best-selling album in the United States since the whole SoundScan thing started. It has sold 16.4 million records. Up to 2016, it never sold fewer than 1,000 copies in a week. It sells an average of 5,000 per week at that time. That's Jeez. Pretty fucking amazing. In 2016, it was still averaging 5,000 a week. It has spent 390 weeks and counting on the Billboard 200. I think it's probably not in the charts anymore, but like I said, this is about 5 years old, but as recently as 2016, it was still in the charts. Did you guys talk about that with Newstead?
Yeah, he said as of the recording, there's been only two albums that were on the charts for like 600 weeks, and it was that aren't greatest hits albums.
Right. So no, I love that he made that, because that, to me, that's a huge distinction.
So Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon and the Black Album.
So it remained in the top 40 for almost 2 years, and the last time it was in the top 40 was on April 17th, 1993, at top 40 selling charts. It produced five top 25 mainstream songs. Do you want to name off the singles? There's a trivia question for you. Can you rip them off there?
I mean, I could have, but I'm looking at it too. So, but it's Enter Sandman, The Unforgiven, Nothing Else Matters, Wherever I May Roam, and Sad But True.
Okay, so if you're looking at the same thing, you know that Enter Sandman actually charted the highest. That is kind of surprising to me. I would have thought one of the other ones did, but anyway. So those are kind of the important details there. I do like what Bob Rock did with this record. I thought everything he did after this was kind of a disappointment because of how... I mean, this is a monster. This is Back in Black. This is Appetite for Destruction, you know what I mean? This is REO Speedwagon. I'm just kidding. they've had a record that sold 10 million copies, High Infidelity. Why should I take a cheap shot at them?
Yeah, come on, dude. You know, it's crazy about this album is, you're obviously, everybody's sick of the, Nothing Else Matters and Enter Sandman. But if you put this album on and listen to to side two, cassette wise, or even Holier Than Thou, I mean, the songs hold up to this day,
and it sounds great. I mean, like the production is just fucking spot on. I'll tell you this, that whole My Friend of Misery, that is the only track on this record that I will actually cherry pick to listen to once in a while. Other than that, if I'm listening to it, I play the whole record.
That's what's crazy about all of this stuff that they're putting out. I mean, I think I was, much as I love Spotify, all of these box sets are on Spotify. You can, all 15 of these CDs are on Spotify already, but you can go and listen to all these different live shows. And I think they put out a live show around Ride the Lightning, and like the band doesn't even come in on the right, on the one. It's just like a big train. It's like a big train wreck, and then the song kind of starts. But I mean, they just don't even care. They just put that out, They're just like, yeah, this was us that night. That's what we sounded like. Whatever.
And just having that, sense of self it's kind of refreshing. It's like, yeah, I had a bad night. You want to listen to it?
Yeah, so I enjoy that. I will actually be seeing Metallica next weekend. They are here at Louder Than Life.
Hmm.
They're doing two nights, doing two separate sets, so we'll see how that goes.
Right on. And, of course, I'm sure I'll hear about it because we talk in text more than people know. I do have to mention, though, that you commented on something from a recent episode that came up on one of these kind of like sidecast deals that I'm doing. That so I assume that you're firing up the Spotify and dragging all your children in to listen to this record on a weekly basis, yes? Like Metallica. Daddy likes Metallica. You like them.
Well, like I took...
I'm trying to
you
be
know,
funny. It seems like it's fallen short. But anyway, carry on.
You talk about, getting our kids into Kiss and Metallica and trying to play quote-unquote good music around them. And, my little one likes, We're Not Gonna Take It and he Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. And, I took him to see Kiss and he really had a good time a couple of years ago. But obviously my 15-year-old, has nothing to do with metal. Hard rock, nothing.
Nice.
He's into these, SoundCloud rappers that just... I'm a big rap fan. I like the rap. And
I like the rap.
I like most eras of rap. But the auto-tune rap takes me out of it because one of my favorite things about rap... is a really distinct, cool voice.
Chuck D, baby.
Chuck D, Tupac, Snoop, Exhibit, any of those, Mystical, any of those guys that just had a very distinct voice. But
Chuck D's my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. He has a playlist on Spotify that we that we can make about from the house to the high school, because I drop him off in the morning on my way to work, that I let him listen to his music. Kind of get his day going or whatever.
Yeah.
And
well, see, that's awesome. My dad let me listen to I would buy a Wasp tape at the mall for my birthday. Yeah. And on the 45-minute drive home to Owatonna, he would let me play it in the car.
Yeah.
He hated it.
It's funny because the playlist is a bunch of different artists.
Yeah.
But
I understand what a playlist is, even though I don't listen to Spotify.
Well, it's a playlist of a bunch of different artists.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were actually describing to me what a playlist is.
So we listen to the playlist each morning, and for the most part, with the auto-tune, you can't really tell the guys apart.
Yeah.
And it kind of bums me out. I'm like, there's no distinct sound here. There's no... there's nothing that makes me go, oh, well, this guy's cool because he has a flow like this and blah, 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 blah. But I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to try to be like, no, bro, we need to listen to Slayer.
Yeah, right.
Because there's no way that's going to work. Yeah. I've taken him to concerts over the years here and there, but it definitely did not seep in. But then at the same time, I guess my dad doesn't listen.
It shouldn't. It should be their own discovery, their own era, their own thing. We should kind of hate it. Yeah.
Right. That's the whole point. It's sometimes, obviously it's vulgar and degrading and, like a good rap tune should be.
Yeah.
So it's funny because it'll just go off and I'll look at him and I'll be like, no other parent is allowing their kid to listen to this on the way to school in the car. This is ridiculous, dude. But yeah, I bought him a hoodie and trying to, if this is what he wants to like, if one of these guys came through town, I will take him to the show, that whole thing.
Right on.
Not going to try to, I also can't be that parent that's reading the liner notes to see what the lyrics say because... And I did have a conversation with him the other day about, I was like, dad listens to a lot of stupid stuff. That's, dragons and murder and, death and all this other stuff, but it's all fantasy. So, you got to think about it, the stuff these guys are talking about, that's fantasy. That's not life.
See,
that
part's parenting. The other part is, what you're talking about there is letting things go. Yeah. Because honestly, especially guys like you and me, we would be fucking huge hypocrites, almost at an unredeemable level, because it's okay to say I smoked dope when I was your age, but I don't want you to. I kind of get that, but I'm like, I think you'll be okay as long as you understand what you just said. You made a great point there. It's like these lyrics aren't necessarily literal,
Right. women don't want to be treated like that. You know, you got to, and things like that, you got to make sure that when you start to date that you're not like, oh, I think women like this. Right. To be degraded and called whores, you know, you can't.
Although I think the song "I Like Big Butts" is literal, right? That's definitely nuance there.
No, he literally liked big butts because he cannot lie.
Yeah. Well, what about some final thoughts on the Black album? I know it meant a lot to you. It was kind of a launching pad for you. I do, like I said, this is an amazing record. It deserves the accolades it gets. I was disappointed in the box set because of the blacklisted stuff. Everything you mentioned that was in there is actually pretty awesome, but the blacklisted, these covers, I don't know. I didn't need, first of all, I don't need any of them, I guess.
Well, you don't like covers, so let's
start.
Well,
there's that, but.
So 53 versions of Metallica songs is not high on your list.
Why not just one of each song? Because they didn't even do every song. You have 19 versions of Nothing Else Matters, but zero versions of My Friend of Misery. Nobody wanted to do that.
There's like three versions of My Friend of Misery.
Oh, really? Well, then fuck me.
They did every song. There's only one. The Struggle Within is the only one that only has one cover.
Well, but I missed it in my research here. So
yeah, over on Knotfest Twitch, we did a breakdown of this album, of the Blacklist. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things they could have done with this album, but I mean, it was a fun listen one time through. It's not in the box set, so let's get that out of the way.
Oh, okay. I did not know. I assumed.
This is its own separate deal. Covers were coming out, you know, they were popping up on Spotify every couple of days, which is a great thing. And I would check them out every day and be like, all right, that's cool. It's not something I'm going to go back to. There were a couple of covers I enjoyed.
Miley. But,
hey, Miley Cyrus killed it, man.
She definitely did. She definitely did kill it. Yeah. Pretending she's any good? God damn it.
Can we stop pretending that she's bad?
Well, there is a valley between any good and bad.
Right.
Like, did she make it through the song? Yeah. If she was doing karaoke at a bar, it might be okay. But no, it's not like, I need to get that in a fucking studio. I'm just sorry. I don't hear it. She always reminds me of Hannah Montana for some reason.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've never seen them two in the same room at the same time. So,
Okay.
Did you like Volbeat's "Don't Tread on Me" or Ghost's "Inner Sandman"? Or
I actually disliked both. It's weird. You must pick those out because, you know, they're bands I like, but because I didn't listen to every song, but those two I did, and I could care less about either. So
yeah. I mean, for the most part, I mean, it's just obviously different styles of music with their takes on these songs. They're not going to replace any of the original songs for me. All going towards charity. And
okay.
I thought it was a fun little tribute to the album. You know, I'm sure it did start with, let's have one artist do each song. And then as it got out, it, like, you know, more people be like, hey, can we do one? Hey, can we do one? You know,
Weezer's like, can we do a spot on version of Inner Sandman for no apparent reason? Cause that's all we do when we do covers.
You know, Corey Taylor did a great Holier Than Thou.
Okay, I didn't check that one out, but largely because I'm kind of getting sick of Corey.
Well, I mean, you know, his company signs my paycheck, so.
I mean, that dude.
That was.
Cannot do any wrong in my eyes.
And a great, great artist. But yeah, and
he is actually, by the way, he is like I think he's gotten a little thin with me, but man, I saw him. And I did a whole day with Corey Taylor where I went to a book signing and I met some of his fans in the parking lot. And then I saw him interact with people while they're getting their book signed. And then I went to his acoustic show that night. And he is the real deal. He truly connects with his audience in a way that it's hard to duplicate. So I no hate for that guy. But man, I just that solo album he did just didn't really click with me. The last Slipknot kind of irritated me. That's really the crux of my bitch. So I'll check it out now because you know he's awesome and you love him.
Well, Stone Sour did a really good Creeping Death, and then on this tribute album, he is the only artist that at the end of his Holier Than Thou, they go into Whiplash. So there you go.
Oh, nice.
So well, paying a little homage to the old days.
As we all want to do, we always talk long when we get together. We got to wrap this up, though. Why don't you just pimp yourself, man? Where can people find? Everybody knows TalkToMe.com, but you got a lot more going on than that.
Well, technically, TalkToMe.com is a real estate agent. TalkToMePod.com is where you can find me.
Sorry.
But, yeah, you can go to NotFest.com, head up over and check out the series section. You can find me over there under the series on NotFest.com. And then obviously Thursday nights, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, you can find me on the NotFest official Twitch, which is twitch.tv/NotFestOfficial, which Baco has been a part of. Jumped on there with me one night and talked awesome. Some Big Four. And yeah, he needs to come back on soon. So yeah, so NotFest official Twitch, NotFest official YouTube. Check out my Jason Newsted interview. If you don't want to watch all four parts on YouTube, it's on podcast form at TalkToMePod.com.
And I highly recommend it. And do you, off the top of your head, know where the Super Bowl is this year?
The Super Bowl this year.
It's in Los Angeles, isn't it? At the okay. So the Vikings and Titans, I think, are going to be meeting there. So you and I will be heading to L.A. there in the second week of February.
I promise you, if the Titans and the Vikings are in the Super Bowl, we will be there no matter where it's at.
You're dropping that NotFest money and taking us both out there, baby.
I will pay your way to this if both teams make it to the Super Bowl.
You heard it here on Cobras and Fire. All right. Hey, Josh, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on, and it was a lot of fun.
Absolutely, man. Anytime you need me, anytime Luce doesn't want to come on the show anymore, you just give me a call. I'll be there for you.
Do you want to do a Rock's Not Dead? What do you want to say?
Whatever, man.
Never mind. Say your stupid town's name, or should I say Louisville?
You can say my stupid town's name.
What is the it's name funny. Again? It's Jerks Knobs.
Floyd's Knobs.
Floyd's Knobs. All right, here we go.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.